and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. My guest for today is Samantha Lewis, principal at Mercury, a Houston-based venture capital firm. Today, Sam and I look back at some tech and venture trends she's focused on, like blockchain, Web3, crypto, and more, as well as dive into what she thinks founders need to focus on in the new year. Sam, thanks so much for joining me today.
Of course. I'm so excited to be back, and I miss you.
Miss you too. And it's no secret that I love catching up with you. For one, you are running around doing so much these days. And I'm excited to talk a little bit about that. But yeah, we're both cat ladies and Houston lovers. So it's always great to chat.
Houston cats and wine.
That's us in a nutshell. But yeah, so let's talk about your year looking back. First of all, you've officially been at Mercury now for 1 year. So happy work anniversary. And you've also added another
2 years.
2 years, yes. God, time flies. And you've also added Coffin Fellow to your overflowing plate of things you're up to. So tell us a little bit about both of those things, how they're going, what's up at Mercury, everything.
Yeah. So my 2 year anniversary was last week. It was fun. I got to choose what lunch we were going to eat that day. So, you know, huge party. But I'm absolutely loving it here. The people that we get to work with in the community and just at Mercury and our portfolio companies are an absolute pleasure to be around. And the intellectual rigor that's put into everything we do here is one of the best things that I could wish for at a firm. So I'm so happy to be here. Over the year, I really solidified where I continue to focus here. And so I lead what we call the power theme at Mercury. And the power theme is all about empowerment. And it's using technology to rethink the way individuals access capital, access opportunity, build wealth, and organize as communities and as society. And so that's very, very much focused on fintech and Web3. So a lot of the investments that I do and a lot of the time where I spend my research is in fintech and or Web3. But with that being said, we all invest across each other's thematic area of interest. And so I also just led a deal in a data platform out of Austin, for example. So there's not just fintech and Web3 in my specific portfolio, but that's where I've spent a lot of this year. So Mercury's going great. Coffin Fellows, for everyone who doesn't know what that is a fellowship for VCs from all over the globe that get together. And it's like a combination of business school and YPO. And so we get together and we're supposed to be very vulnerable with each other. We're supposed to be very honest about what we're going through at work. And then we just work through a lot of things together professionally and personally to make sure that we're growing into the best people we can be, which then in turn makes us what we believe the best investors we can be. So it's been really fun. It's been like a total journey of, you know, looking internally to see how we can really concentrate in what our best skill sets are as investors, and then how we can use that to continue to empower entrepreneurs, because entrepreneurs are always at the center of everything we do. So I love it. It's so much fun being like in this group with 60 people of a network from VCs from across the globe. And I just got back from our Tel Aviv module, and our next one's in London. So I can't complain. It's a fun thing to do.
It does sound really cool. And it sounds like a lot that you're focused on right now, both just as a VC, but also as a Coffin Fellow, is kind of looking at what founders are dealing with these days. So I know you just sat down and cranked out a whole specific report. What conclusion did you come to? What are you seeing happening for founders looking for VC investment?
Yeah. So we all know it's turbulent market times. We're unsure where the market's going. And with uncertainty in the public markets, that always puts uncertainty into the private markets. And so what I've been spending pretty much the past quarter and a half or two quarters doing is working with all of our portfolio companies, and all of us are doing this, working with all of our portfolio companies to just make sure that our balance sheets are bulked up to be able to last through what is to come in 2023. If 2023 things start to look up, all great. But if things continue to be volatile, then we need to be prepared for it. And so what we're advising all of our startups to do is to get as much cash in the door right now as you can. So even if they raised capital 12 months ago, like just open on the same terms and pull in as much cash as you can. You want to get runway through 2024 at least. And so almost all our portfolio companies have runway through 2024 now. And what we're trying to do is just make sure that we can control our own destiny with our companies. So if you're close to getting cash flow break even, really focus in on that if that's right for your business. If you have super, super strong metrics, that's great, because we believe that the VC market over the next 12 months is going to be a flight to quality. And so when we think quality in private markets, that is who is scaling the most efficiently. And so being able to prove over a period of time that you can scale efficiently, that you have the right controls in place to be very prudent with the dollars that you have, I think those are the people who are going to get funding. And history shows that during market turbulence, those are the companies that end up getting funded. Another thing about controlling your own destiny as a startup and as a executive at a startup is valuations are continuing to go down. And so just resetting expectations about what investors are willing to invest on and what they're not. And it's almost always directly related to multiples in the public markets. So for example, some of the multiples trading in the public markets right now are like 3x to 5x, where they used to be like 15 to 20. And so no one is going to price, well, hardly anyone is going to price deals at a 15 to 20x whenever public is still only paying 5x, because that's what later stage investors are going to do. So there's just a lot of reset that needs to happen on valuation expectations. And then the thing is, though, it's okay to take some dilution now if you can do a flat round to pull money in, because the bottom line is, again, you just want to control your own destiny. You really want to turn all the dials, get your metrics as efficient as possible to prove that you are the companies that should be getting the money right now in a tightening market environment. So that's where we've spent a lot of our time the past few months. And it's hard. It's hard to tighten the belt for sure. But it's the right move. And we're feeling pretty comfortable with a lot of our companies.
That makes a lot of sense. And obviously in the startup world, not all startups make it, but we don't want like that good technology that can really make an impact to be the victim of just like uncertain times. So that makes a lot of sense. I wonder if there's any like specific region or even industry that's been hit the hardest by this uncertainty, if that's something you found in your work.
Well, yes, crypto and Web3 for sure. But before I go there, fintech has been hit pretty hard too. So actually everything that falls under my theme, which is just lovely fun. But yeah, so fintech public markets, multiples continuing to go down, continued uncertainty. There was a huge boom in fintech over the past few years, and so it's natural to see it. But the companies are still getting funding. There's a lot of fintech VCs that are still really, really interested in doubling down on things. So the capital's out there and the capital is still flowing, which I think is a positive. Just valuations, you're not getting the premium that you used to in fintech anymore. And so I've seen that a lot. Should we go to Web3?
Yeah.
Rein me in, because I could talk about it all day, Nat, but rein me in. I won't go too crazy. So all the market things that we just talked about, all the turbulence we just talked about that's already happening in the market. And then now you put that, and then you put what's happening in Web3 on top of that. And we have a complete shit show. Sorry, I don't know what other word to use. but that is because there was a lot of money floating around, which then was just being thrown to try to find return, right? And so there was non-discipline investing. And then there was an amazing technology, but this amazing technology unlocks a way for people to get into projects really, really early, where that's not really the case outside of Web3, because if you are a seed stage company, for example, there are not many ways. It's not just super accessible. You can't get on Robinhood and buy shares of a seed stage company unless you're a crypto company and you have a token. And so then it just created risk on top of risk that people were getting into projects really early. They were putting a lot of money into it. There was a lot of money floating around. There was a lack of regulation. And so all of these things led to crazy FOMO investing, people throwing money at things that they didn't really understand from a technology standpoint. And so then they were throwing money and throwing valuations at hype projects. And so a lot of the hype projects that we've seen crash over the years or over the year, when people started looking under the hood, they started to get scared. But no one was looking under the hood before they threw half a billion or $1 billion at them, because then that means they were going to miss the investment. And so too much money out there, lack of regulation, and then just kind of a lack of people really understanding what this technology is unlocking and what the real use cases are going to be. And not caring about commercial use cases. So kind of throwing business fundamentals out the window was, looking back, not the smartest move for a lot of investors. Luckily, Mercury, any of the Web3 investments that we've done are safe. Topple, as everyone knows, if you've ever heard me talk about anything, you know, I talk about, one of my favorite children, all my startups are my favorite children. But Topple was one of my earliest. So we'll say that they're my oldest child, them and Syzygy. And Syzygy and Topple both closed big rounds this year, which I'm so proud of them, so proud of Trevor and so proud of the Topple team. But ultimately, the companies that are now getting investment and that are now still seeing capital flow into them in Web3 are the ones who have been building a sustainable business from the beginning. So thinking about what are the real use cases that blockchain unlocks, and how does that add economic value? And when people have been thinking, like all the builders that I've met in the space that have been thinking about Web3 like that and thinking about what does blockchain unlock that is valuable for society, that's valuable for businesses, that's valuable for people, those are the companies that kept their head down, continued to build when other people were hyping. And so it kind of looked like we missed the boat, but now we're well positioned to be the darling child of the next, or the darling children of the next bull run. And so that's what Mercury, we've been very, very disciplined about where we put dollars in Web3. And so we've done mostly infrastructure. And the only thing we'll continue to do in Web3 are infrastructure companies, just because we've done a lot of infrastructure in the Web2 world. So it makes a lot of sense for us to continue that in the Web3 world. So that's Mercury. And then through Kauffman, I'm actually the startups committee chair for the VC3 DAO. And that's an investment DAO that only has Kauffman fellows in it. And we get together all the time. We spend a lot of time together. I'm hearing from some of the best and most popular and famous builders in the space, and then creating a thesis around that to deploy capital into startups. So we've invested in, I think we're at like 15 or 20 companies by now. So we've done a lot of, so I have a lot of exposure to other Web3 companies outside of infrastructure through VC3 DAO. So ultimately, what we're telling people in the Web3 space, all the builders in the Web3 space, is continue to drive use cases. Make sure you can get your runway to last through 2023. If you can get it to 2024, then you need to just hyper focus on proving out that there's real world value here and that there's real use cases. And for the companies that are able to do that, and then they play within the bounds of what business fundamentals are, and they play within, you know, the rules of kind of where we think the hockey puck's going on the regulatory environment, then we're getting pretty comfortable around those companies.
So I want to ask you specifically about something you mentioned, and that was this hype investing where people are kind of rushing the investment process rather than taking time to look under the hood, like you said, and do their due diligence. So how do you kind of toggle that line of, you know, trying to get there before it's like an oversaturated investment market, and also making sure you're doing enough due diligence? Like, how do you look at that personally? How does Mercury look about that?
Yeah, I'm really aligned with how Mercury looks at it. So I can just speak for all of us in general right now. So in the market environment we just came out of, where people were just throwing money, and if you couldn't get to a term sheet in, you know, sometimes a week or 2 weeks, you were going to lose the deal. We really had to figure out how we tighten our process up. And so what that does is there's a lot of internal dynamics at every single venture fund. And so just understanding as an entrepreneur, hey, what are the dynamics at your venture fund and how quickly can you move and why, right? Like, what are the holdups? What are the hurdles that we need to jump over? We all just understood what those were for each other. So then we could answer the questions that everyone needed answered very quickly. So we were able to get term sheets out within like sometimes 10 to 14 days over the past few years when we had to. Now, almost no one is doing that. Like, almost. I mean, I'm sure there's someone out there that's like, well, that wasn't the case for me, and that's great. And there's outliers. But for the most part, no venture funds are moving that fast anymore. And the thing is, people are just having to be much, much, much more disciplined about their investing dollars because, one, you don't have as much money. And then two, if you're like high net worth or you're a pledge fund or something like that, two, if you're a venture fund, you have to be really, really careful because LPs in very bad market environments historically don't always fund capital calls. So even though there's a lot of dry powder committed to venture funds out there, it doesn't actually mean it's not sitting in anyone's bank. The LPs, the investors have that money, and then we as a venture fund has to call it. So we call it a few times a year. So that's the way it works. And historically, 2008 time period, the dot-com bust, LPs didn't always give money on their commitments. So this is a real concern. So VCs have to be super disciplined, and they have to prove that they're good stewards of investors' money. And so that's all to say that now, in a way where we're not constantly chasing returns in a FOMO and hype environment like VCs were for pretty much the past decade, but especially the past few years, things are slowing down a lot. So there's significantly more diligence done pre-term sheet, where a lot of that was done post-term sheet in the past few years. And there is a lot of digging on, can this grow efficiently? And when do they have to raise money next? And can they raise a lot less money than they would have 2 years ago and still get to the same place? So there's just different types of questions that we're asking, right? Because in an uncertain market environment, you have to just make sure you don't run out of cash. So that's where we're focused now. And then Mercury, we still try to move pretty quickly so that we never drag entrepreneurs out or their process out. So now instead of 2 weeks, now it's somewhere between 4 to 6 weeks, depending how much we know about the market and depending how much we know the entrepreneur going in. But we're still trying to move pretty quickly.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with what we're talking about specifically, but it is kind of personified by, like, in my mind, everything that's happening with Elon Musk and Twitter, where it was just this rush to buy it and then backpedaling and then mismanagement and who knows where
Oh my
it's even gonna
God.
the time between we're talking and this podcast goes up. But I just like that's kind of where my head goes in terms of this like trigger happy environment of people kind of jumping to do something.
Yes. You know what? That is actually a really great parallel because a lot of people think that they can do things that are really hard, and running one of the largest software companies in the world is very hard. And just because you're a genius inventor does not necessarily mean you can do that. And I think a lot that happened in VC too. A lot of people were like, oh my God, a bunch of people are making money in tech. Let me just start throwing money at tech startups. That doesn't work either. Because it's hard. It's really, really hard to be an entrepreneur, and it's really, really hard to build businesses, and it's really, really hard to do all of that and then at the same time constantly have to convince VCs to continue to fund you. So it's very hard. And if you don't know where your next round of capital is coming from, or your investors can't open those doors for you, it's even harder. And so yeah, there's a lot of hurt and pain out there right now for sure on people needing capital. It's unfortunately just the market environment we're in, but it's tough.
Yeah, well, it's hard to be a founder and get that investment. I think it's also something to be said about making that investment and being the person to try to like predict whether or not this company, which might be a really great company, might be a really good technology, but you still also need like the stars to align almost. Like you need the right timing, you
Yes.
need the right founder, the right team, like first hires and everything.
That's an amazing point. Over the holidays, everyone should read The Power Law. It's
Okay.
really good. It's not necessarily breakthrough on if you've been studying the space for a while, right? But it underlines that over the history of Silicon Valley and then the broader tech ecosystems, one of the absolute most important things that an entrepreneur can do is recruit the top talent. So you getting the top talent in place at your company is the recipe for success, almost period. And it doesn't mean that you are going to be successful, but if you don't do it, you're almost for sure not going to be successful. And so shooting for the moon and pulling in the absolute rock stars who have been there and done it before, constantly just trying to make sure that you are not the smartest person in any room you're in your company, when it comes to the specific functional areas, is really important. And so I think that's a thing to double down on, especially in this market environment, on recruiting just amazing talent that has been there and done it before and knows how to weather market cycles and knows to stick around and knows what startups are like. And startups are bumpy, right? They're hard. And so, like, pulling in talent like that, that knows it, that sticks with it, and that knows how to build and manage teams is absolutely crucial.
So one thing I always like to bring to these podcast interviews, I know this is a special one because we're kind of doing this like fun look back, look forward thing, as are a lot of my conversations these days around the holidays. But obviously Mercury is a Houston VC firm. You also have Houston companies in your portfolio. So tell us a little bit about the Houston lens of what you're focused on, what Mercury's focused on, and kind of, you know, that, like I said, look back, look forward. How 2022 was, what's to be expected from 2023?
Yes, one of my companies, they are in stealth mode, so I can't tell you who it is right now, but I'll tell you soon, Nat. They are a Houston company, and I was so excited because the more Houston companies we could do, the more we get to see them. And so their office is right down the road from mine, so I'm with them all the time, and we're just having great fun building a company together. And I think they're a great example of what Houston is. There's a lot. We did another Houston company this year. We did another one the year before. But the bottom line is, it's people in Houston. There's a lot of entrepreneurs out there that are just heads down building their companies, and they're building super successful companies, whether they're bootstrapping or just taking on a little bit of revenue. And or taking on a little bit of investment, I mean, and they're really just figuring out, hey, how do I make sure that I'm setting this company up for growth? And how do I do that in an efficient way with as little money as possible? And we keep finding these companies, and we are so excited to meet those founders because th that's a great thing, especially going into an economic downturn like we're in right now, that people that know how to be like very prudent with cash. And so we tend to find that a lot in Houston. And so I think that's a huge strength. Of Houston, but on the other side of the coin, we always have to remember, for the most part, when you want to really grab market share, that is the time to take money. So positioning yourself as a company to control your own destiny and survive and make sure you always have cash, but then at the same time, really know when to put on the pedal and accelerate if you have the funding relationships and the capital relationships you need to be able to continue to fund. So of course, that's amazing. Mercury was a seed and Series A investor in Cart.com. So we're so proud of what Cart.com has done. Topple, of course, is a Houston company that mostly is not in Houston anymore, unfortunately, but they still have Houston roots and we love it. We have quite a bit of companies that either have Houston roots or something that has to do with Houston. And we're hopefully funding another one that we just put a term sheet out on. So more on that soon, but hopefully that will be closing Q1 and I can tell you all about it.
I'm so excited. I have so much news coming in from you. So that's really exciting way
So
to start
much.
a new year. So something to look forward to. We've talked about, you know, Houston, this Houston angle. We've talked about Web3, but I know also on your radar and a hobby of yours too is the crypto world. And of course, we know all the headlines that have been happening and the news within crypto, good and bad, but like, tell me what your outlook on crypto is. What are you paying close attention to these days in the crypto world?
So I'm still very bullish on blockchain as a technology. Crypto exists because blockchain exists. And what blockchain can unlock is incredibly powerful. That didn't change because there's a bunch of crazy hype around crypto. It didn't change. It might have changed for the common household who isn't really following tech very closely, but why I led the pre-seed round in Topple in 2019 is because of what they're building that blockchain can unlock. And crypto is just one piece of that much bigger puzzle, the much bigger macro opportunity that generally Web3 is. And so to me, crypto is just one piece of that. Crypto is, the financial mechanism through which a lot of these things can work. But in an environment where there is no regulation and in an environment where there is a bunch of free money floating around the economy, we see the things that we just saw. And unfortunately, greed took over. And what's happened this year has been super unfortunate. It's been really unfortunate with Luna to FTX to some of the other collapses. And it's been unfortunate because there are people who trusted their money with bad actors. And when you trust your money with bad actors, that doesn't necessarily mean those people made the wrong choice. They could have done all the research in the world. Sam Bankman-Fried with FTX convinced some of the best investors in the world to give him so much money. And so, like, everyone got tricked. And that's just super unfortunate. And I hate that for the space. But ultimately, and I feel so sad for the people that lost a lot of money through that. But I think as we come through this, it's a super positive. You have to wash away, you have to get rid of the companies who are bad actors in the space, who aren't actually building for what blockchain can unlock and ecosystems and some of the financial inclusion piece that you have with the crypto. Like, we need the companies to get funded that aren't the most popular or that know how to hype the best. The companies that need to get funded are the ones that are building real use cases for blockchain, Web3, and crypto. And if you can do that, and if those companies are actually going to start getting the second, third, fourth looks, and they're going to start really being able to drive what the next bull run will be, with that and some healthy regulation around it, and with people just being more cautious about these actors in the first place, I think what we're going to see over the next few years in the blockchain space is going to be really, really exciting. And people are going to start to understand that it is so much more than just cryptocurrency, that it really can be a part of our daily lives and it can make our lives much better. And whether that's how we connect with our favorite brands, whether it's how we transact globally, whether it's how we purchase things at the store to prove that they're ethically sourced. There's so many things that blockchain can do for us as consumers and then broader for the global economy that I'm really excited to come out of what has been an incredibly tough year for the space, to really see what's going to emerge. And I think what's going to emerge are the companies who are building for what the world needs, not just what their pocketbook needs.
Yeah, I want now, like, I want to read like a think piece and like a magazine long form article about blockchain's PR problem. 'Cause that's really kind of what it is. Like, how you explained it is it's just like this public view of the technology is off kilter. There's so much more potential
Yes.
than there is like bad news coming out of that.
There are two amazing ones that I will point you to. So one is Fred Wilson. I talk about him all the time, but he is like my favorite VC blogger because like I learned venture based on Fred Wilson's blogs and like starting in 2012 basically. But it's called AVC, so just avc.com. He just wrote one November 15th and it's called Taking a Long-Term View of Web3. Everyone should read it because it really talks about almost what I just said, right? And I think a lot of people that have been in the space for a long time, I've been in it for quite some time, been in it since 2015, 2016. It's like we have been looking around the past few years, kind of being like, hey, this is crazy. Like, this is great. We're getting attention, and people are thinking, like, we all, I think, we're being positive and thinking that people are understanding what crypto can unlock. But that really wasn't the case. People were just trying to make a bunch of money. And then that's without regulation, it turned into some bad things. And when people started to recognize that, it didn't change the long-term outlook that we have or the positive bullish outlook we have, but it helps us reshape how we need to continue to invest and build in what is a very, very, very new technology and a very new way of thinking about markets. And so I recommend that one. And then there's another one, The Crypto Story by Matt Levine. He's like one of my favorite Bloomberg writers. Anyways, he's really, really good. And he wrote The Crypto Story. And it basically is just like, where does it come from? What does it do? Why is it useful? And what's next? And that one's great if you just want kind of an overview of it.
So another thing that has really defined your year, and we've talked about this, is Ukraine and the fantastic work you've done with multiple trips to bring supplies to Ukraine with you and your fiance, which is also new. So congratulations on your
Oh,
engagement.
thank you.
But tell
Thank
me,
you.
share with everybody about the work y'all have done, the impact you've made, and kind of still the potential for people to get involved with you and what you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. So just to give everyone a high-level review, so my partner, yes, my fiance, my life partner is Ukrainian and his family is still in Ukraine. His mom's here in the US, thank God, and his aunt, but his dad and his brother and their extended family and friends are still in Ukraine. And so it's been a really tough year for us. But Dimitri, my partner, just really saw like the need on what people needed. And this was like right when the invasion happened. And there was so much outpouring of support from all of our friends and family. And people were just like, how can we help? And Dimitri knew exactly how people could help because there was a shortage of a bunch of supplies. So getting things even in Europe was really tough to get across the border, but we can get a lot of the stuff in America. And so we both have a lot of airline miles. And so what we decided was we're just going to start taking supplies over as much as we can. And so fast forward to right after Thanksgiving, we have now taken $150,000 worth of medical and tactical supplies over to Ukraine. We fly into Warsaw in Poland and we drive to the border and we hand everything off to directly to his dad at the border. His brother can't leave the country because if you're a man of fighting age, you can't leave the country. So his brother and his dad drive to the border. They drop off his brother to basically just hang outside right off on the other side of the border. His dad drives across. We load up all of his car with a bunch of stuff. And then they go and disseminate it directly to the territorial defense and to the military. And the thing that's the most amazing, touching thing about it is that the soldiers in the field are so excited when they get this. When they get these supplies, whether they're the medical or the tactical supplies or whatever they are, that they're taking pictures and they're sending them to Dimitri's brother or they're sending them to the connection Dimitri's brother gave it to. And they are just overjoyed of the support that's coming from people outside of Ukraine. And it's amazing. We're going to continue to do it as long as we have to, but we are hoping every day that it's not going to have to continue that much longer. So thanks for asking. It's been amazing. We plan to go again in Q1. I don't know if there's anything everyone can do to help right now, but if we do open something up, I will let you know, Nat. I think we were just doing Venmo and Amazon lists to this point, and then people started writing us big checks from my firm and from Dimitri's company that he works for, and so. I don't know. I don't know what we're gonna do on the next time, Dimitri. We just got home this time. Every single time we go, things change on what the people in the field need. And so we'll start gathering that information and put something together after the new year.
Yeah, well, I'm endlessly impressed with everything you do just in the venture world, but that for sure is always, oh, I just love that about you too and how
Aww.
you really took this initiative because it's literally y'all flying these supplies there yourself personally and driving it. Like when you think
Yes.
about like what people can do to help Ukraine, you did like the most. Like, you know what I mean? That part.
Yeah. Well, we realized it was way more efficient for us to pack it up and, mule it over and it's much cheaper because we have so many airline miles that we're taking like hundreds of pounds of stuff over each time, where like it's hilarious watching us walk through the airports. But we're doing that because it's so much more efficient and it's cheaper, and we can get it into the hands of the defenders literally like 3 days after we leave the US. And that is way faster than what anyone could do if you ship it through a company or anything else like that. And so it makes sense for us to continue to do it as long as we can. So we're going to keep doing it until hopefully Russia leaves Ukraine and lets them have their life back.
For sure. That's everyone's New Year's resolution.
Yes, for sure.
So I guess my plug then is just everyone should follow you on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and watch your updates for that if they're interested. Because yeah, it is comical the amount of suitcases y'all are looking, but it's also so impressive. So
It is hilarious. People give us the funniest looks in the airport. And I'm like, if only you knew I also had three cats, you'd really be giving me a funny look, people. But yes, I update on Instagram at SJO Lewis, SJO Lewis, same on Twitter. And then LinkedIn is my name, Samantha Lewis. So.
Well, it's so fun catching up with you. I know we also have more catching up to do, but as far as the podcast goes, we'll call it here. It's exciting to see everything that you are working on, and can't wait to see what comes out of the new year, too.
Thank you, Nat. I miss you every single time I don't see you for like 1 week. My heart starts to hurt again. So I need to see you soon.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.